Support for MPB comes from the Mississippi Museum of Art in Jackson. What Became of Dr. Smith by artist Noah Satterstrom is on view beginning April 20th. Learn more at msmuseumart.org.
This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting and depends on the support of listeners like you. If you can, please donate today at mpbonline.org. And thanks.
Welcome to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Think Radio, where each week we talk with creative Mississippians. I'm your host, Lauren Rhodes, Director of Grants at the Mississippi Arts Commission, and today I'm talking with Guillermo Billy Salinas. Billy is a pastry chef and visual artist based in Jackson. He is the owner of Just Vanilla Bake Shop and the Director of Operations at the Collage Artist Collective. Last fall, he was a contestant and finalist on Season 7 of Food Network's Halloween Baking Championship. Welcome, Billy. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thanks. So we'll just start a little bit with, you know, where you came from. You were born in Texas, but you moved to Mexico as a child with your family. When did you move there, and where did you grow up in Mexico?
Yeah, so we were in Texas for a little bit. I think I was just about turning two when we moved down to Mexico. So my parents are missionaries. So they always wanted to work close to where my dad grew up, which was in Acapulco. So that's 3 hours north. So I grew up in Ixtapas y Huatanejo, and I was there until I was 17.
Okay. And as a child growing up there, were you drawn to artistic pursuits?
I didn't really know I was being, forgive the pun, drawn to it. But I just like to draw a lot.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking that that was just something a lot of people did. And so I was always the kind of guy that friends would ask to draw stuff. But I thought it was, you know, nothing crazy. But I got into baking and pastry, which I liked working with my hands. I like creating. I like making things. So, yeah, it was a fun job.
Wait, so as a child, were you...
Well, a child, I was 14. So
okay,
yes,
when you started
child, yeah.
getting interested in baking.
Well, I was probably 10 when I got interested in baking.
Okay.
I was 14, I think, when I got my first job.
Okay. So how did you become interested in baking? Did you see there being any overlap between, you know, drawing and this seemed like another kind of artistic thing? Or how did that first interest you?
Well, like I said, I enjoy working with my hands. I was always very hands-on kind of kid, you know, playing with all different types of makeups things, if it was like a Bionicles or a Legos or just one of those like model stuff of any form, taking apart, putting it together. And I realized that cooking and baking was pretty similar. The same thing with drawing, you know, different things, coloring and all that stuff, fun stuff. So it appealed to me. And it was really... It's a very satisfying thing to bake because it's an instant gratification. You make something and then you show it to someone and they can instantly enjoy it. So that was also just a really fun medium to work with of I get to make something to make people happy. And I can get a job doing it. It was pretty nice.
Yes. So you said your first job was at 14. What were you doing?
A guy liked the cookies I made and just said, hey, I have this bake shop. Do you want to just come in and make those cookies a few times? And I was like, sure.
Wow.
And then I helped out a little bit, you know, here and there. And I started learning how to do other recipes in the bakery. And they kept me on for longer doing other stuff. And, yeah, slowly that just kind of kept growing.
Very cool. So what made you decide to enroll in culinary school?
I had a mentor, a friend of the family of my parents. His name was Willie Besmer. He was a master pastry chef, and he worked in Acapulco Princess for a number of years before they were there by my parents. And so my mom, as soon as she saw that I was interested in baking, she asked him, she was like, got us in contact, and we started talking. And at this point, when I was getting close to being 17, he had kind of been mentoring me, like, get jobs, work. You know, I learned from School of Hard Knocks, like, just get your hands on whatever you can. Any opportunity you can go work for hotels. And if you keep liking it, because it's not the easiest career, when you get old enough, come to my school and I'll teach you. So when I turned 17, I moved to Fresno, California.
Okay. So that's a pretty big move. Was there any, you know, was there any culture shock or did you just dive right in? And
there's a little bit of, I think anyone starting for the first time by themselves, especially at 17, you know, new stuff is figuring out where to live, you know, how to make your own groceries. I was pretty independent before then, which is one of the reasons my parents knew, like, yeah, this is fine. You can handle it. But I had to get a phone, get a, you know, bank account, all that fun stuff. Culturally, though, being my mom American and my dad Mexican, we traveled back and forth from the United States quite a bit.
Gotcha.
So America wasn't new to me.
So when you were enrolling in culinary school and choosing baking, you know, to me, pastry and kind of that side of the culinary arts seems the most challenging. It's the most precise, the most exacting. Did you, you know, having this kind of artistic background as well, did that give you a leg up, or is it just completely, you know, different side of the brain that you were using?
No, I started realizing that making things and putting stuff together, whatever medium you're using, they overlap all the time. And so drawing conceptually in something two-dimensional, as doing something as simple as drawing up a sketch for a cake design or something like that, is very useful. And then the same, you know, hand techniques and just the precision in making lines, when you start getting, which now I have a little bit more of the language for, but when you start getting into a general sense of design, if you're going to make something, design elements still apply to whatever you're doing to be able to be aesthetically pleasing.
Because you kind of have to envision what the final product is going to be like. And I imagine sometimes you're probably sketching it on paper.
On paper.
Yeah. And so, you know, you were in culinary school in California. Eventually you make your way to Mississippi. Can you tell us a little bit about how that happened?
Yeah, so after California, I went back to Mexico, worked for a little bit, but I'd gotten the equivalent of a certificate for just like a year intensive of baking and pastry specialist. But I really wanted to finish a college degree just to have that as just something that I had done, especially while being so young, because I moved back when I was 19. So I was like, well, if there's a time that I'm going to do this, it might be now. So I started looking into schools. I started looking into culinary management schools and just going back into just a full degree. The culinary school turned out to be very expensive. So I was going to take a pause on that. But in the meantime, my sister was also looking at colleges, my youngest sister, and she stumbled upon Belhaven and she was wanting to go there. And I saw that they had an arts program, and someone had told me back in California that I should apply to an art school. That they'd seen my drawings, and they're like, that's something that you could pursue if you wanted to. So on a whim, I was like, okay, I'll submit, just looking at a bunch of different schools, sending different things, seeing what bites. I sent my portfolio to Belhaven, to Bob Pennybaker, and it was just full of cake designs, a few drawings that I had done, and chocolate sculptures.
Wow.
And he called me pretty, you know, he's like, what do I need to get you to Belhaven? He just saw a sense of design, going back to that, of just like, there's something there, and I think that you could do really well if, you know, taught a little bit more.
And I'm sure that application stood out from other students just because of your work experience, too. Yeah.
So yeah, I got a, you know, good enough scholarship to be able to afford it, and I came to Jackson, Mississippi.
So, being at Belhaven, what was your education like there? What classes did you like the best, and kind of what types of media did you explore?
Well, one of the things I really enjoy in the chocolate work and cake designs to kind of feed into that is sculpture. So I did a lot of I do a lot of woodworking. I did a lot of wood sculptures. I did a lot of metalwork, things like that. I haven't had a chance to work with sculpture in that degree because it takes a lot of equipment. And I'm slowly building my studio, but I'm not quite there yet. But I would love to get back into sculpting. But the other one that I just have continued doing since I, you know, since I can remember has been drawing. And I did a lot of that while at Belhaven. I took every class they offered for drawing, did independent studies on drawing. I did photography as well. I did, as well as, you know, just basics of everything else. But yeah, I think predominantly drawing and sculpting.
That's cool. I imagine going from sculpting chocolate and cakes, you know, to metal and wood is It's kind of a range you've got there.
Yeah, you start seeing that the different mediums start blending and it becomes a medium.
Interesting.
And you're like, oh, how much can I manipulate this thing and what can it do? And so the artistic side and going to art school gave me a huge liberty to be able to explore that a little bit more. Because I was so used to, I have this idea, let's make it into something that's going to be practical and then get eaten. Mm-hmm. So there was so much practicality and an end craft to what I was doing. But at Belhaven, for the first time, I was able to explore no end goal. I didn't know what this medium was going to be or what it was going to do or what function it was going to entail. I was just exploring what could be done.
Right. Mm-hmm. Very cool. So when you got out of Belhaven, graduated with your Bachelor's of Fine Arts, mm-hmm. Did you know then that you wanted to get back into the world of culinary arts mm-hmm. and did you want to work in a restaurant or a bakery, or what was your vision for your career at that point?
It's been interesting because my career kind of keeps flopping ping pong back and forth between art making and culinary, and I never seem to
there's
be able to.
There's a lot of overlap.
There's a lot of overlap, and I don't. Sometimes I think, well, I'm gonna like when I went to Belhaven, I was like, well, I'm just gonna be an artist now and just do that. And then while there, I also got a job. Working at La Brioche. Mm-hmm. So I was a sous chef there for all the way up until college. And then I met my wife, and she's a dancer. And so she was finishing up her master's, so I stayed in Jackson for a little bit longer. And then we were looking at places for, and so working at La Brioche and just doing art stuff on the side and finishing my side of studies.
And for those who don't know, La Brioche was a wonderful pastry shop mm-hmm. in Jackson mm-hmm. that really fine art pastry. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Very French patisserie. I think it was one of the first people bringing that European style. But I met my wife and we got married and she was looking to go into dancing for a company somewhere. And I told her, I was like, you find a place. I was like, I can get a job. This is your time. You're going to be dancing. So, you know, I don't know anything about dance. You find a city, we'll go. And so she found Houston. And so looking into Houston, I found someone looking for a position as a sous chef for the Post Oak Hotel, which is the only Forbes hotel in, I know, Houston. And it might be, I think it's the second in Texas, which Forbes is just a fancy way of saying that. The 1% is the people that catered there and stuff. So it was a huge step, too, in my career, just being able to get that position. Like, I was just good enough to get in. But we moved down there. And so working there for about a year until COVID hit, it was a huge exposure for me as far as, like, I'd gotten to the point where very few people were critiquing me in the way that the chefs there would. Hmm. It would pick apart every little detail, even things that I'm like, there's no way they're going to catch that. They would catch it.
Wow.
And because it was such a, their clientele was so particular that they just, it was excellence or nothing.
So what was the stress level like working at that level?
Very, very high. Especially, I was putting well in 12, 16 hour days.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes working 6 days a week. It's intense. Like when you get into hotel work, people don't realize how high pace it is and how stressful it can be. It's fun. But it's stressful.
Can you give us an example of some of the things you were making?
So a lot of the things that I would do, particularly at the Post Oak, is managing. So once you get to the title chef, it basically means that you're a little bit more departed from the kitchen making mm-hmm. itself and just making sure that it runs consistently and get every your team and assembly lines and just everything ordered. You still help in and do different things, but you just make sure that everything's running. So, but we did have over 7 outlets that the bakery would run out of. So
wow.
Between bakery, restaurants, in-room dining, all these different things, banquets on top of that, there was a lot. It was a big operation for a small bakery, for
Very
sure.
impressive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hi, I'm Lauren Rhodes. You are listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. The Arts Hour is a co-production of the Mississippi Arts Commission and MPB Think Radio. You can also listen to the show on Think Radio every Sunday afternoon at 5. To have access to all Arts Hour interviews, subscribe to the podcast using your favorite podcasting app.
What is Chalkboard Chat? It's an MPB education podcast. It's a variety show providing information and resources for teachers, students, parents, guardians, and everyday people on various topics. It's learning something new with every publication. Chalkboard Chat. Find the podcast or listen from chalkboardchat.mpbonline.org.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
You're listening to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Think Radio. I'm Lauren Rhodes, Director of Grants at the Mississippi Arts Commission, and today I am talking with Guillermo Billy Salinas. Billy is a pastry chef, a visual artist, and entrepreneur in Jackson. Welcome back, Billy. Last fall, you were selected as a contestant on the Food Network Halloween Baking Championship. Very exciting. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like?
It was an experience. It was, so I'd actually been talking about before ping-ponging back and forth between pastry. So I had been, after COVID happened, I hadn't really been baking, and that's when we moved back to Jackson. I hadn't been baking for about a year or so. So I was out of the game for it, but I get a message from Food Network, from a scout, just on Instagram, just saying, hey, would you be interested in participating in the Halloween baking show? And I was, first of all, I was waiting for a social security number to be asked, and, you know, when this got scammed.
Yeah.
But the interviews kept going on and kept going through one process until finally, up until almost 2 weeks out, I got the green light. It was really quick turnaround. It was one of those things where they went through interview. They did a small staging process where they just to make sure that you can do what you say you can do. So
in person?
No. So this was all during COVID too. So everything was, normally it would have been some form of in person, mm-hmm. but now it's just Zoom and time yourself, honor system. They were like, if you can't do it in the time that we say, you probably don't want to lie about it because you're not going to be able to do it on camera.
Because then you'll be on camera in front of the national audience, yeah.
So it was a lot of the honor system. So they saw that and that got approved. They just kept waiting and just block these dates out for whatever reason. I think it was 2 weeks before they said, yeah, you're one of the contestants and we'll have your flight and we'll have your room and this is where to go. And
so where was it filmed?
It was filmed in Knoxville.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They have a studio there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so did you have an idea of the challenges before you got there?
No clue.
Or the other contestants?
No, none of the contestants. I remember when we arrived, we were all kind of just like looking around, being like at the airport, like how are we the competition? Who's walking around with the whisk, you know?
Did you have to bring your own?
No, they gave us everything. They did. They have a great kitchen, but no, you weren't allowed to bring anything in.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So give us a sense, I guess, of the other contestants. Were they from all over the country?
Yeah, they were from all over the country. A lot of owners, executives, pastry chefs of some form, bakers, cruise line pastry chefs, a very large array of different people in the industry, but all very, very talented.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what were the challenges?
It was mostly the time was some of the challenges to begin with, but we had to do anything from 3 foot tall cakes to that were some type of, it was 80s theme, so it had to be horror element of some form, to drip cakes, to filled cookies, to donuts, all different types of stuff, all
and
of them with their
no
little twist.
Recipes, right? Mm-hmm. Like you had to just have your recipe in your mind,
mm-hmm.
and create it
and make it. Yeah.
I read something about a clown cake that you...
Yeah, that was...
An infamous clown cake?
Yeah, so the clown cake was probably when I thought, I was like, that was my time to come. So every time you would go into every week, it was... especially when it started narrowing down, anyone could go. It's just a slip. It's who has a slip today. And my, you know, it could be anything of just forgetting something. That's all it took. And it would put you automatically in the bottom. So my slip happened, I think it might have been episode 4 or so.
So but you made it.
I made it.
That's pretty far.
I was halfway through. So I was like, you know what, whatever, if this is a slip, this is my slip and I'm gone.
Yeah.
It's fine. And I think that's kind of what pushed me to keep going. But basically, I was getting momentum. I spurred the 4 episode, and you know where the kitchen is. One thing I'm really good at is speed. I can crank some up stuff pretty fast. So I was the first one even just like decorating my cake and just kind of starting to put the first glare on. But I went too fast and the cake was way too warm.
Oh.
And it started literally from the inside just kind of melting and oozing. And so I had to just grab the whole cake and just throw it in the trash before it just made a mess everywhere and start everything from scratch.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. And it was the shape of a clown, so that's why the clown cake. But it ends up being that I ended up pulling, I think with an hour left on the clock, I did a cake in an hour. And I wasn't
Baked it and decorated
in less than, I think it was an hour or so. I can't remember. I know I had the cake in the oven. I think it was in 15 minutes.
I can't even make a banana bread in an hour.
Mm-hmm. It was very stressful, but I was just, at that point, I didn't even look at the clock. I just kind of, if I'm going to go, I'm going to give it the best, you know, out possible. So
tying into your background as an artist too, did you feel like, you know, with the decorating, were you kind of thinking outside the box
a little bit
in terms of that style?
Yeah, I think I can get to the point where I can work with what I have really well. So if stuff kind of gets switched on me, I can make something do pretty quickly. So I typically have like a loose idea. And so I was able to, that part was, since it's the least amount of time that I had, went by pretty quickly. And I did well enough to make the cake look passable.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So do you think, would you ever go back on another baking competition? Was it like the kind of experience that you would want to do again? Or is it sort of that one time, you know?
If you'd have asked me right after the finale, I would have said no. after a while, though, I think I would do it again.
Yeah.
Like I said, it stretches you. Any type of stress environment, even if it is stressful, you grow from it. And I've definitely grown from that experience. And also just meeting the bakers was a great experience. And I would love to be in another. It's very rare that you get a room full of people that share that passion with you,
mm-hmm.
that have similar stories of they've baked since, typically bakers, especially at that higher level of that get to do it so well, they've done it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they can share experiences with you that other people just can't.
So even though you're competing, there's not like animosity. It's more of like, you know,
we had a very healthy group.
Yeah, good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So do you still keep in touch with?
Yeah, we have a group text message. I think at least weekly, if not almost every other day, we get some type of message trail.
Okay, mm-hmm. Very neat. So, you know, that experience coming back to Jackson, did it kind of inspire any new creations that you've been whipping up back here?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of them was just Vanilla Bakes. I'd been back in Jackson for a while, and I hadn't been doing any artwork. I'd been working for Collage, which is an arts and artists collective, and been the director of operations for that. So I hadn't really been doing much baking, but then the show happened, and then afterwards, well, people were interested in, when are you going to bake? You know, do you have your bake shop? You know, where can I get your stuff? And I was just getting a few orders here and there. So I decided to kind of take it to the next level and start a weekly bake. So every week I send out an email, if you're on the email list, of what bake I'm going to be doing that week.
Okay.
And you can sign up for that and pick it up on Friday. And so that has been slowly trickling to now selling at the farmer's market. Now I'm selling stuff at a coffee shop. So it's slowly starting to grow.
So what sorts of things do you bake for just Vanilla Bake Shop?
It varies. At the farmer's market, one of the things I'm known for the most is croissants. I make a really, really good croissant.
Which I've been told are very difficult to make.
Mm-hmm. So I like challenges.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah.
And being able to do a really good croissant, it's very meticulous and it takes its time and its patience, but the reward is so good. And so every Saturday, I sell my croissants at the farmer's market now. And that's one of the things that's, you know, consistently there, from chocolate to a different field of all different sorts. But weekly bake is kind of, I'll see what's happening that week of, like this week is coming up is Father's Day. So I'm going to do a Father's Day inspired bake. So I did a bacon cinnamon roll bourbon.
Wow.
Bake. Yeah. So
That sounds very delicious and intense.
It's good.
Yeah.
Me as a father, I quite enjoy it.
So you mentioned, too, that, you know, you're the director of operations at Collage. Tell us a little bit more about what Collage is, where you're located, what kind of activities you guys do.
Yes. So we are located off of High Street. So right across from the fairgrounds, and there's a little area. So we were given a building to Collage, which is a nonprofit that my father-in-law runs and has been doing it for a while. I think he started it in the 80s in California and brought it with him over here. But the idea, the concept of it is just a collective of artists coming together. And since we were given a building pretty soon after COVID donated to us, well, what can we do with this building? So we started creating, and this is when I moved back to Jackson. So we started creating a space for artists, first fixing the building and giving artists a space to be able to either create. We have a theater company. We have a, we set down a dance floor. So we have a dance company. City Dance goes there. We have a few different classes that go on different places, from art to gallery openings to sometimes hosting. We're just now starting to host worship nights and music concerts. We have a singer-song or writer group that meets there. Traylon Elseroth is the one that leads that. And so, yeah, just a melting pot of different things. Me as myself as one of the collective, as the visual artist that works there.
And so as director of operations, are you kind of organizing programs and
So organizing,
bringing artists in?
Typically, I started with just kind of, let's fix this building. Let's get it to where it can be. It can host people. And now it's been slowly figuring out what types of things that we can be hosting, bringing people in, what everyone needs to be able to accommodate them, whether that be spacing, furniture, things moving around the building. I've done a few things where it can be very manipulable, where you can, we have walls that can be moved and structured so that space can be closed off for theaters, for dance, for different things like that.
And is there a commercial kitchen in there, or where do you do your baking?
So we had thought about putting a commercial kitchen in there at one point, but then we started realizing that that was going to be, the person that was going to be used, it was going to be me. So that kind of needed to be different than the arts and focused more on my own business, which just vanilla, and maybe having an own entity of itself. So it's still working in tangent because my father-in-law and my brother-in-law and myself, we also run North Shore Specialty Coffee. So between the three of us, we're running a nonprofit, running a coffee business, and then Just Vanilla is kind of falling under the umbrella of the coffee shop.
Gotcha.
So we kind of partner up at the farmer's market where we get a cup of coffee and we do baked goods. So primarily because of that, I've been able to operate under the cottage law. So everything right now is out of my kitchen.
Gotcha.
Which I'm getting at the very tip of what my kitchen can produce.
Yeah, because you're probably getting a lot of an increase in orders every week. Yeah.
Yeah, my wife is very patient.
Filling up the counter space. And...
I've doing my best. But when it comes to the weekend, she just she's a very patient lady.
Yes, and a great dancer as well.
Yes,
Well, tell us a little bit. You mentioned Traylon Elseroth, who is going to be our musician featured again in this next song. And he's an artist at Collage. So what does that look like for, you know, a songwriter to take residence in Collage?
Yeah, so Traylon works there and has his studio there where he writes most of his stuff and records it. And so he's similar to me of just kind of as a visual artist, trying to sell my work and trying to get different things. I use the space for, he uses it in the sense of, sorry, I just blanked for a complete second. He uses it in the sense that he has a meeting there with all of his different singer-songwriters, and he's able to produce his music with the ability to be able to perform. So that's what he uses it. And Collage helps by getting him places and getting him places to be able to show his music.
Okay.
And different things like that.
Very cool. Hi, I'm Lauren Rhodes. You are listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. The Arts Hour is a co-production of the Mississippi Arts Commission and MPB Think Radio. You can also listen to the show on Think Radio every Sunday afternoon at 5. To have access to all Arts Hour interviews, subscribe to the podcast using your favorite podcasting app.
On Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit, you get information about foods you should eat to stay in good health and tips on how to stay active. I'm Josie Bidwell, host of Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit, an associate professor of preventive medicine at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. Listen to the show every Monday at 11 or subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy with your preferred podcasting app.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
You're listening to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Think Radio. I'm Lauren Rhodes from the Mississippi Arts Commission, and today I am talking with artist and pastry chef Billy Salinas. So we were just talking about, your pastry practice, your pastry chef, and you have a bake shop, Just Vanilla Bakes. But I want to kind of change gears and talk about your practice as a visual artist. You mentioned that you draw, you've done sculpture, photography. How has your practice as a visual artist changed over time? You know, what did you like to draw as a kid, and how has that evolved into what you're doing now?
Mm-hmm. I remember, I forget all about what I drawed when I was a kid was a lot of stuffed animals. I do remember that. And but I did like animation. I did, I think one of the earlier things that I actually was interested in was being one of the artists for like a Disney thing, especially because I would like look at all the arts and sketches that they were doing. I think it was so much fun. Hmm. That changed when it started getting a little bit less pen and paper, because I love pen and paper, and I love just kind of that raw bit of doing it, and started getting computer screened a little bit more on the digital side of things, and having so that type of graphic, it's still fun and I'm still interested, but I love the paper aspect.
You like the tangible.
Yeah, I love old styles of animation and watercolor, and just kind of like that little bit of stop. Miyazaki, I'm a huge fan of all of his type of illustration for his animation. And so I think a mixture of that, of loving watercolors, loving that kind of like loose drawing, really drew me into liking how to draw with dip pen, which is it's just the ink. It's, again, old school way of drawing where you have a pen with a quill pen, dip it in the paper, and then you make your mark. And then you keep doing that and dip and continue making. And then I started exploring that with that I can also make different washes. So I would use brushes similar to like watercolor, where I would water down the ink and be able to use that to create value on paper. The advantages of using an old style dip pen is that it allows you to make different marks with your sensitivity. So if you press really hard, it will open the pen quill to release more ink. So you can make a large, broad mark, similar to like calligraphy.
Okay.
Or if you're really delicate with your sensitivity, it can make a really, really fine mark. So a pen, that dip pen just allows so much more mixing of the media. You can even use the dip pen itself with watered down ink to make more of a gray mark instead of just a stark black. So that's kind of a little bit of what my drawings look like right now. So pen and ink, dip pen with washes. And so I did that while I was at Bellhaven. Again, taking all these just drawing classes, experimenting with different mediums, what I liked, what I didn't. I love the unforgivingness of the pen because it was difficult.
Yeah.
If you can master it, it pays off. I like that. And one of the reasons why I like making croissants, it's challenging, but if I can do it.
And it probably requires a lot of repetition and practice.
Which I'm good at. And so I started just drawing from life, just different things around Bellhaven itself. So I did a lot of house drawings, a lot of foliage and different landscapes. Drawing from on location, too, was something that I grew into really, really enjoying. Because I had done a lot of drawing where I would take an image and duplicate it or duplicate it and then slightly change it from either photograph or something. One thing, being a student, I did a lot more was just taking my sketchbook and just plop down, sit down, and whatever I saw, I would just draw. And it's a different form of drawing, using your eye to see everything versus having a photograph that's just already a two-dimensional surface. The camera just sees so differently than your eye will, because your eye's constantly bouncing back and forth. So you really have to hone in and figure out, okay, this is my area of design, this is what I'm choosing, and it's going to fit in this piece of paper.
And I imagine there's more challenges being in plein air. You know, you have to deal with the elements and distractions.
There's
and...
a lot of, it's a lot more engaging, I found. At first, it's annoying because you have car sounds, you have birds, you have, you know, the sun, where is it hitting you in your face, and you're having to move angles. But all that annoyance and noise around you, if you're able to kind of focus and feed, it feeds into tranquility, and it also feeds into the drawing. So how I'm feeling at the time, or what's going around me, or people that are entering wherever I'm drawing, how am I feeling and drawing it right there? It's a weird sense of being able to see someone's emotions through a drawing of how they saw the place.
And do you notice a difference between the drawings that you've done, say, from a photograph and the ones that you've... Have you ever drawn the same place from a photograph and in person?
I have. And it is... It's different. It's... And I wouldn't say even better or worse, because I'm not saying, you know, you can't draw from a photograph, because I use them quite a bit. But the initial drawing, the initial what I call like a bones of a drawing, where you're getting the elements, where is the tree going to go? Where is this going to go in relationship to this over here? Getting that all on paper, being there, is very, very different than once you have it laid out from a photograph. It's, you manipulate so much stuff that you don't even realize. It's just instinctual from drawing it, being there, and not having anything to reference it but size your view. So I've noticed that, especially in the design part of it. And there's some drawings that I will do from photographs. Like, people ask me, commission me to do drawings from photographs, and it's easier now too to draw from a photograph,
because you don't have the exterior distractions, and
but you don't gain that same understanding of the place when you do it just from the photograph.
And when you're drawing outside, do you have like a time constraint too? You know, you kind of are a little bit more under pressure.
You got to work a little bit. You got to be patient. You got to be okay with sitting for a couple hours, and it grows your patience. It's a form of meditation to that degree of, you know, you're calming things down, you're focusing. This is, I'm going to stay here for the next 2 hours. I'm just going to stay here. And there's a lot that you can learn from just putting yourself in one place for 2 hours and doing nothing but looking. Because that's essentially what you're doing when you're drawing. You're just looking at every single thing. You pick up things that you wouldn't notice before. But that happens after a hump. Because when I first sit down, it's always like the first 30 minutes. I'm angsty, I'm wanting to move, I'm wanting to, like, leave, you know, this is not turn. You pass over the hump of 30 minutes, it's almost like working out, where you just, like, get over that first 30 minutes of the jog, and then you could go on for a lot longer. It feels like that.
Yeah, I feel like that process is similar for writing as well, and I wonder if other artistic practices are similar. I'm thinking how, you know, as a pastry chef and being on a baking show was kind of the opposite of that, like, you don't have time to think, you have to just completely go on your instincts. So it's interesting that you have these two almost opposite practices.
Yeah.
And maybe one is the sitting and being patient and kind of meditative experience helps.
I do like both.
Relax, yeah.
I have noticed that about myself of yes, it's all good to draw and everything, but I don't know if I just did that. I would need something else, something that's just a little more mechanical, something a little more like, I've just done this for so long, I'm just doing it the way I know it's going to be done, and it's going to result in something I know is going to result. And drawing is like, I'm going to start with, I don't know, and then halfway through, I hope this is okay. And then at the end, oh, that's what that was.
Yeah.
It's a very different process.
A little more free-flowing. So... Before I started the Arts Commission, I was the director at the Dora Welty House and Garden here in Jackson. And you stopped by one day to do a drawing of the Dora Welty House. Can you talk a little bit more about how you got interested in drawing houses and architectural drawings, and specifically your Belhaven drawings too.
So that's something I've been known for a little bit more now. It's just house drawings, or what I like to call house portraits, because I really like portraiture. I like drawing people, but something I've known from drawing people from life, whether that be figure drawing or anything else, it's if you try to make a drawing of a person directly how they look, like so let's say from a photograph, it's going to be off. They're not going to look like that person, especially if you know them. Photographers do this really well too, where they get to know the person before they photograph them, so that they know what is how they can get the angle that most shows their personality. Because a person, depending on where they move, where they, you know, their head shape, it differs. So I took that same concept with drawing houses, and so kind of house portraits, where I draw a house or a location, and I push the limits of what, how can I draw this in a way that makes it feel more like the place and less just architectural? Because if I did it just architectural, it would be fine, you know, it'd be a nice little drawing. But if I were able to make a drawing that pushed those boundaries, because it's a drawing that I'm doing, I'm not trying to replicate the house. I'm trying to replicate what that house feels like, or what that place feels like. Because if you close your eyes and try to think of, let's say, your childhood home, the way you remember it in your memory, I can guarantee you doesn't look at all the structural way it actually is. So I like bridging that gap a little bit by being able to illustrate those. And I've gotten pretty good at it, enough to where I've gotten several commissions. And one thing that, and going back to collage, that helps out with artists, for instance, myself, that's a resident there, the BTC people, the Belhaven Town Center, has asked collage to, they commissioned them to do a series of Belhaven drawings. And since I'm one of the artists, they're donating the money to collage to be able to support me as an artist. So I'm able to work for collage in the time that I'm going to be doing there. I'm actually doing drawings for this commission for these patrons. And so they commissioned a set of 13 drawings of all iconic locations around Belhaven.
So Belhaven is a historic neighborhood here in Jackson. How did you select? Did you have, you know, the option of selecting which 13 houses you would do?
I did. So I talked with the person that commissioned Ruffin, and you know what was his vision towards it? What did he want to do? He's in charge, one of the leaders of the Belhaven Town Center, so one of the person that brought District Donuts and the Fertile Grounds and that whole development area. And so I talked to him first of his drawing, because he wanted one of that whole development, and then of all the other ones. I gave him a big list with me, and Doug, the CEO of Collage, thought about places. And there were some that were easy to, you know, at the top, and then we slowly started whittling some out and putting some in. And then that's when we really were trying to, like, some that we were getting rid of and some that we were keeping, those I had a lot more say in, because I would be like, yeah, let's get rid of that one. Not because it's not a good place, but it's not very interesting to draw. Let me focus on this one.
That has, like, more interesting architectural features.
Oh, I want to do this one already. Yeah, so I'd have a little bit more say, just because I know the Belhaven area so well. So I already knew a lot of these buildings, and I knew it wasn't going to be difficult for me to draw them if I already had a relationship with it in some way.
Mm-hmm. So what have been some of your favorite places to draw? And are you using that same technique that you described?
Yeah, so pen and ink drawings are, yes. I'm really enjoying right now the Belhaven Town Center, because it's the one of,
is it still under construction?
It's still under construction. Yeah. So that's been an interesting one, because talking about having to be able to manipulate what the place looks like.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to, in this composition, trying to bring in all the buildings, which is challenging in and of itself, because they're a street that divides them. So how do I bring all of them in one frame? So I'm having to play with architecture, play with angles, play with perspectives, as well as playing with a few of the buildings that haven't been finished yet. So I've gotten graphic renderings of them to be able to draw, but the structure is there. So that helps.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah. And there are a couple other ones. I did the Children's Museum. It was really fun to do.
Okay.
Because it's a children's museum.
Yeah.
So that fit with my style really well because I had a little bit more liberty. So all of them get their little personalities.
And so we'll be able to see those at the Belhaven Town Center when it opens.
Mm-hmm.
If people want to learn more about your work and find you online and order pastries from your bake shop, where can we do that?
So currently right now I operate mostly out of Instagram. So my pastry one is Just Vanilla Bakes at Instagram. And I also have an art page, which is Guillermo Salinas Art. So those are the two things where you can find me. And then a little bit more at collage.org. That's where you can find everything about the nonprofit.
Thanks for listening to this MPB Think Radio podcast. MPB depends on support from listeners. So if you can, please contribute today at mpbonline.org.
Do you drive a vehicle? Then you'll find autocorrect helpful, especially on Coach Charlie's Tip of the Week. Listen to our podcast with me, Coach Charlie Melton, on any podcasting platform or on the MPB Public Media app.